Just as a deer, because of ignorance, cannot see the water within a well covered by grass, but runs after water elsewhere, the living entity covered by the material body does not see the happiness within himself, but runs after happiness in the material world. Apologies, translation in Purport, by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. So the purport. This is an accurate example depicting how the living entity, because of lack of knowledge, runs after happiness outside his own self. When one understands his real identity as a spiritual being, he can understand the supreme spiritual being, Krishna, and the real happiness exchanged between Krishna and oneself. It is very interesting to note how this verse points to the body's growth from the spiritual soul. The modern materialistic scientist thinks that life grows from matter, but actually the fact is that matter grows from life. The life of the spiritual soul is compared herein to water, from which clumps of matter grow in the form of grass. One who is ignorant of scientific knowledge of the spirit soul does not look inside the body to find happiness in the soul. Instead, he goes outside to search for happiness. Just as a deer without knowledge of the water beneath the grass goes out to the desert to find water. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to remove the ignorance of misled human beings who are trying to find water outside the jurisdiction of life. Rasol Vaisaha. Rasol Apam Apsul Kanteya. The taste of water is Krishna. To quench one's thirst, one must taste water by association with Krishna. This is the Vedic injunction. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Once Srila Prabhupada was in the UK, he was being interviewed by some reporters. And the reporters asked him a very simple question. They said, "What are you here for? What is your mission?" And Prabhupada said that you Britishers, you came to India and you looted everything. You took all the diamonds, the emeralds, the rubies, all the precious stones. You looted India for all it was worth. But you left one Divya Ratan, one divine jewel, and that was the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I've come, I've sailed the seven seas in order to give you this wonderful divine jewel of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada made that journey and has given us this wonderful jewel, this jewel of all jewels, a crest jewel, Srimad Bhagavatam. However, I'm very unqualified to be here and to be speaking on this very grave subject matter. So I pray for the blessings of the Vaishnavas to be able to speak something of some worth. Pray that the devotees can empower me. So this verse is very interesting. Ravindra Prabhu asked me to give class, and before I said yes, I looked at the verse and I found it very appealing. There's a lot of a lot that can be said on the verse. But one thing that I want to play on today is talking about uncommon sense. So we have these sessions on Sunday afternoons for some of the young boys called Uncommon Sense up in the ashram. Chankinath Prabhu and Ganshambriya Prabhu are working on that. So it's very, very nice sessions, but it's a very interesting topic, how uncommon sense, how spiritual life is uncommon sense these days, and how material life seems to be very common sense, although it is such nonsense. So we talk about uncommon sense, but so often today, even common sense is very rare. There are so many examples where common sense is just not seen. Even amongst the most rich and famous people in the world, or the most educated people in the world. There's an interesting story of the NASA Apollo 13 mission. So they were a space mission to go up into space, make all sorts of discoveries on the moon, the various planets within our solar system, investing billions and billions of pounds into this project. Some of the best brains in the world are engaged in this kind of research. And so they built a very intricate, very elaborate spaceship. They had invested millions and billions of pounds in the right spacesuits and food for the astronauts. Such intricate arrangements had been made. But then one bright spark within the NASA mission, within the team, said, they're going to have many findings, but they're going to have to note them down. How are we going to work that out? How are they going to note all their findings down? Because we have an ink pen, but the gravity, the force of gravity in space is a little different to the force of gravity on Earth. Does anyone know what the relation is between the force of gravity on Earth and that in space? 1/6. Very good. So gravity is 1/6 on the moon as compared to the Earth. And therefore, for the ink to flow on the pen in space will be very difficult, because ink naturally flows down by the force of gravity. And so the Americans spent $12 million in developing a pen which would flow, whereby the ink would flow down in order to write, so the astronauts could write their findings. $12 million. Imagine what you could do with $12 million. Imagine how many Bhagavad Gita's we could distribute. So the Russians came up with the same problem a few years later. And they came up with a slightly different solution. One may argue a slightly simpler solution. They used a pencil. So $12 million versus a pencil. The pencil was maybe 12p. So uncommon sense. Common sense is very uncommon these days. There's another story. I'm going to need a volunteer actually for this. Any volunteer? Someone who's got nice writing, because you're going to have to write on the board. Anyone? Nishinga Tirthapu, he's got nice writing. Please. I'm going to ask you, I've wiped the backboard actually, so I'm going to ask you to just flip it around. No. If you just flip it around. So once there was a very rich and wealthy man, and he owned 19 horses. And he was getting very old, he was in his 70s, and he decided to write a will. And in his will, he was going to distribute these 19 horses, yep. He was going to distribute these 19 horses amongst three different people. And in his will, he wrote that half of my horses should be distributed to my one and only son. a quarter of my horses. Can we write a half of the horses to three different? That's fine. So a half of the horses should go to my son. That's good. A quarter of the horses should go to the village priest. Priest is fine. And a fifth of the horses should go to my servant, because he served me very nicely throughout my life. He's been very diligent and very honest and very taking care of me very well. So when this rich man actually died, everyone was extremely confused, because I had 19 horses, and everyone was wondering and scratching their heads and wondering, how are these 19 horses going to be distributed? Because half of 19 is 9.5. So you don't get 9.5 horses. You can't split a horse in half, because a horse will die. There's no point in that. A quarter of 19 is half of 9.5. 4.75. And then a fifth of 19 is 3.8. So you don't get 3.8 horses, you don't get 4.75 horses, and you don't get 9.5 horses. Everyone was very, very confused. So then a wise man came along. He came riding on his horse, jumped off of his horse, and said, "This is very, very simple. All of you people are trying to work out this problem. No problem at all." He added his own horse to the group, and it made 20. So we have 20 horses, including the wise man's horse. And suddenly, the solution appears. Half of the horses should go to his son. That makes half of 20 is 10. A quarter to the priest, that makes 5. A fifth to the servant, a fifth of 20 is 4. 10 plus 5 plus 4, 19. And one for me, one for the wise man. The wise man got on his horse and rode away. So 19 horses. A round of applause for Nchinga Tedpu. Thank you very much, Nchinga Tedpu. So 19 horses were distributed amongst the son, the village priest, and finally the servant. And the one wise man drove away on his horse. So, interesting. Common sense on one level, but common sense is very uncommon in society today. However, spirituality, Krishna consciousness, makes so much sense to us. But it's unfortunately very uncommon. However, materialism, we would argue, is common nonsense. It's common nonsense. So people today are trying and trying and trying, chewing the chewed. Prahlad Maharaj explains. They're trying to be happy. And so what's described here is the example of the deer. And the deer is running far, far away to try and find water because it's thirsty. But actually, that happiness, and in this case, the water which will provide it, which will quench its thirst, provide it with happiness, is just under the grass. And so often, happiness in spiritual life can be covered. And so people on the outside, they view spiritual life as some austerity, something very difficult. I'm going to have to give up so many things in my life in order to be spiritual. But actually, if you just scratch the surface a little, happiness in spiritual life is so easy to obtain. In many ways, peace, satisfaction, simply by chanting Hare Krishna and following the four regulative principles, one can become so much more peaceful and happy in their world, in their life. And everyone's experienced that in their own lives, and that's why they're here, they're in this temple room. But also, as devotees, we have to understand and remember, and I have to understand, that there's no halfway house. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogeshwarya Prasakta Nam Taya Parita Cheshtam. That we can't have a halfway house of bhog and aishwarya as well as Krishna consciousness. We can't enjoy the material opulences of this world and at the same time live a life of spirituality, because in that way we'll be in no man's land and we won't actually be pursuing spiritual life in all earnestness and really obtaining from it what we can. So Srila Prabhupada was once in Edinburgh and he was again talking to some reporters, and the reporters were very proud. They were thinking that this man is from a third world country, he's from Calcutta, he's from India, and they were very proud to be in Edinburgh. And so Srila Prabhupada was playing on this. He said that you have such nice buildings here. And the reporters were saying, yes, yes, very nice buildings. And then Prabhupada said that you have such educated people, such a nice city, so many opulences. And the reporters were getting puffed up and they're saying, yes, yes, we have such wonderful people, such educated people, such wonderful buildings, such a beautiful city, so many wonderful artifacts and statues. Prabhupada asked, how many universities do you have? And the reporters very proudly said, we have 2 universities. And so Prabhupada said, you have so many wonderful buildings for all of these students to enjoy in. And the reporter said, yes, yes, they were agreeing very happily. And then Prabhupada turned on them, he looked at them. He looked in their eyes and held up his finger. And he said, but why are you producing so many hippies then? And the reporters suddenly, they dropped. Why are you producing so many hippies, Prabhupada asked. No one could answer. No one could give an answer. And then Prabhupada explained that society, we can't have happiness in a society which is simply made of stones and windows. All of these buildings and all of these material opulences won't get you anywhere. They actually won't make you happy at all. What will actually make you happy is Krishna consciousness, is spiritual life. And the reporters just dropped and they were very disheartened. So Prabhupada was always pointing towards spiritual life and how spiritual life is actually the panacea for this age. What we find today is that only very few people are actually really taking to spirituality, to Krishna consciousness with any sort of seriousness. And sometimes as devotees we can become disheartened. We can wonder and feel that actually, when will this golden age come? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talked about 10,000 years, a golden age from the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu onwards, and how there everyone will be singing and chanting and dancing. Maybe not everyone, but the holy name will resound across the world. And so sometimes as devotees we wonder, how will this happen? When will this happen? But actually, we should understand and remember that there's always paradigm shifts. There was a philosopher called Immanuel Kant in the 18th century. He was a German philosopher, and he came up with this idea of paradigm shifts, how society and the world around us goes through paradigm shifts, where there may be a prevalent philosophy, ideology in this world, but at some point or another, it changes. There's a massive marked shift. For example, there was the idea that the whole solar system revolved around the Earth. So this is a geocentric point of view. But then in the 1400s, there was an individual called Nicholas Copernicus, and he proposed the idea that all of the planets are actually revolving around the sun. He proposed a heliocentric point of view. And so this caused a massive shift in the scientific theory at the time. And everything had to change. All of the measurements and ideas had to change. And that was a paradigm shift, he argued. So similarly, there are many paradigm shifts that we have also observed in more recent history. I was just booking a ticket to India recently. And I booked Kingfisher against the advice of various devotees. I thought it would be okay. The price differential between Kingfisher and the nearest airline was quite large. I got a call a couple of weeks later from the travel agent saying that we'd advise you to change your flight because we don't know whether the Kingfisher flight that you've booked will actually fly. Kingfisher may go bankrupt at any time. And so I looked up Kingfisher on the internet, And I saw various articles. Some were from very recent articles which were talking about their bank accounts being frozen, looking at the various factors about why Kingfisher's experiencing trouble. One was that fuel prices are very high. Two was that many governments are taxing very high for airlines. And so the various factors which were resulting in Kingfisher's troubles. But then there are also articles from 2007 and 2008 when Kingfisher was on top of the world. It was being voted as India's best airline. Everyone who wanted to fly to India was going by Kingfisher, and it was on top of the world. And everyone was glorifying Kingfisher. And so I was just seeing how within 5 years, 4 or 5 years, Kingfisher had gone from hero to zero. And then that made me think about the boom and bust cycle. I studied economics at university, and so we talked about the boom and bust cycle. So in society, in economics, there's a boom in an economy, and then there's a bust. And after every bust, there's a boom, and after every boom, there's a bust. And so when there's a boom, everyone thinks that the boom will last forever. Things will never end. The glory days will never end. And so some commentators call this people were drunk on capitalism. So within the capitalist arena, people are so happy, people are enjoying material life, and they think it's never going to end because deep down they hope it's never going to end because they're enjoying themselves. But they're denying the reality. And the reality is something which economists have studied for decades and decades, that after every boom there's a bust. And there was a bust. We had the credit crunch and various other economic crises, and that meant that there was a bust. And now that we're in a bust, everything's down, and some people are saying that actually we're never going to have a boom again, things are never going to be the same again. And so we have this mentality of when we're in a situation, we always think it's never going to change. And so it's the same with material life. When you're happy, when you're enjoying on a material level, you hope and you think that it's never going to end. And that is the meditation. But actually at some point, it will end. And similarly, when we're suffering in the material world, we think that it's never going to end. There's no hope at the end of the tunnel. There's no light. But actually, there always is. Misery will also come to an end. Everything is temporary. Krishna explains that this world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. Everything is temporary. So similarly, in the 18th century, 18th and 19th century, Britain was the economic powerhouse of the world. Industry, the Industrial Revolution, 1750 onwards, Britain was booming. Cotton industry, trade was massive. And everyone thought that Britain would never not be the economic powerhouse of the world. But over time, it lessened and lessened in terms of its strength. And of course, it is still very strong. But we see America took over that mantle, especially after the Second World War, 1960s onwards. America was on the top of the world. And now what we find is that America, to some degree, seems to be waning, and China seems to be emerging as the next economic powerhouse. So change is a nature of the world. Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. We see amongst religions, Christianity was so prevalent across the world. The Crusades spread Christianity across the entire world. And then we had Islam, or we have Islam, you could argue, which is extremely strong these days and is growing at a very rapid rate. And so we can also envisage that in the future, Krishna consciousness, the Vedic paradigm, will also be very strong, because we have a philosophy, we have an ideology which is more deep and more profound than any other philosophy and ideology in the world around us. We have more detail, more insight into the spiritual world, into the nature of the material world, than any other ideology. And so as the more and more that we can propagate this and help people to understand the depth of Krishna consciousness, the more that this movement can really go forward. And actually, so this idea of spreading Krishna consciousness, which Prabhupada refers to quench the thirst of the material material world, Prabhupada spread this Krishna consciousness movement. And so there's a conversation between Dharmaraj and Yudhishthira Maharaj when the five Pandavas, when the first four Pandavas went to the lake in order to Shishirada Gokulananda ki, Shishitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishigornitai ki, Shri Prabhupada ki. So, the five Pandavas were approached, or they had to go to the lake, and they drank water from the lake because they were very thirsty, and the first four Pandavas died as a result. And so the last was Dharmaraj Yudhishthir. So he actually approached his father, who was at the lake. And his father asked him very many questions. And Yudhishthir Maharaj gave some amazing answers to those questions. So Dharmaraj asked, "What is the most valuable of all possessions?" And Yudhishthir Maharaj replied, "Knowledge is the most valuable of all possessions." Dharmaraj asked, "Which man is considered honest?" And Yudhishthir Maharaj replied, "He who desires the good of all creatures is honest." And Dharmaraj asked finally, "Which man is dishonest?" And Yudhishthir Maharaj replied, "One who is not merciful is dishonest." And so in Krishna consciousness we understand that the greatest mercy is not to give someone who's starving grains, although this is mercy. But a starving man can be given grains, but the greatest mercy is to give them Krishna consciousness, is to give them the holy name. And so this aspect of Audharya is very important. So sometimes we understand that Audharya, the mood of mercy, of giving, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is even superior to the Madhurya Ras. It's superior because it's the mood of giving, which is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is all about. But sometimes we also understand that the mood of giving, this Audharya Ras, is a subset of the Madhurya Ras. So within the Madhurya Ras is the mood of, I am so happy. Happy just doesn't do justice to how the residents of Vrindavan feel. But let's use the word happy. I'm so happy and I want to give this to others. So Radharani doesn't just have a mood of enjoying or having Krishna enjoy that relationship, but rather she also has a mood and the feeling of wanting to give this to everyone. And therefore Radharani is so happy when we preach, because we are engaged in the activity of engaging other living entities in ultimately the service of Krishna. And so Narottam Das Thakur explains in his Prarthana, towards the end of those prayers, he explains that the road to Vrajabhakti is very slippery and very, very difficult. The road to Vrajabhakti is very slippery and very difficult. But we understand that through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his Audharya, through his great mercy, we can actually attain Vrajabhakti very easily. So what is very, very difficult becomes very, very easy through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So without any extraneous endeavor, Prabhupada explains, without any extraneous endeavor, we can attain Vrajabhakti simply through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is how amazing our movement is, simply by preaching. So Mahaprabhu said, Prithiviti Achi Naga Dardigram. Mahaprabhu wanted his name to be spoken, to be heard in every town and village. And so Prabhupada gave a challenge to everyone, that everyone needs to get on the bandwagon. If we all get on the bandwagon of this preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then things will become so easy. What's so difficult can become so easy. And so there was a letter actually where Prabhupada was very disappointed. He was very disappointed with the disciple. One of his disciples had left, and in the process of leaving, he had created quite a fuss. And so Prabhupada explained in this letter that he was very, very disappointed. He explained to this disciple in this letter that, "I gave you a chance. I gave you a chance to be an instrument in this movement, a very valuable instrument in the hands of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I wanted to give you a key role in this movement. But now you've left me forlorn. You've left me very disappointed. But don't worry. if it's not going to be you, then it's going to be someone else. But someone will help me in this movement, in this mission, to push the Krishna consciousness movement forward. The credit won't go to you now, but it will go to someone else. So Prabhupada was explaining that don't worry, you've left, and you've done it in a distasteful way, but someone else will join in this movement, and someone else will take the credit. And so really this was a calling from Prabhupada to all of us to actually take on the mantle and to be used as an instrument in the movement. There was a nice example of Prabhupada. Once he was outside chanting. He was just outside his house. And he would share his house with a godbrother of his, a sannyasi godbrother. His name was Dol Govind Shastri. And this Shastriji, he would teach Sanskrit in a room just below Prabhupada's house. So Prabhupada would live upstairs, and downstairs would be a classroom where Shastriji, Dol Govind Shastri, would teach Sanskrit. And so one day Prabhupada was just outside and he was chanting. And Dol Govind Shastri, he came out and he said to Prabhupada, "Oh, you're chanting, how are you?" And they exchanged some niceties. And then Shastriji, he asked Prabhupada, he said, "Abhay Babu, did you know," of course Prabhupada was known as Abhay Babu, this was when Prabhupada was a householder. He said, "Abhay Babu, did you know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explained that the German, the French and the Russians, one day they will be chanting the name of Lord Gauranga." He said, "How will this happen?" And Prabhupada said, "Why, do you have doubt?" And Shastriji said, No, I have no doubt. Of course, how can I doubt Thakur? How can I doubt Bhaktivinoda Thakur? But how will it happen?" And Prabhupada looked him in the eye. As he was walking up the stairs, Prabhupada turned around and looked him in the eye. And he said, "It will definitely happen, but it won't be you." So he was a sannyasi. He was a sannyasi, and he said, "How can you say that?" He was incensed. He said, "What?" And he's a grammatician, so he started analysing and he started saying, "He doesn't think it's going to be me. Does that mean he thinks it's going to be him?" He said, "He's just a householder." And so Prabhupada continued walking up the stairs. And so Prabhupada explained afterwards that he was using "not you" in the plural. He was saying it's not going to be you to Dol Govind Shastri, but actually he was referring to all of his godbrothers. Prabhupada said at that time, "It won't be you, but it's some foolish disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Some foolish disciple of his will spread the name of Lord Gauranga." So this left Shastriji very confused. So many years later, this Shastriji, he left the sannyas ashram, he got married, and he started living in Cuttack. And one day he was walking down the road and he saw on a rickshaw. Cuttack is known for its rickshaws. Has anyone been to Cuttack before? There's many, many rickshaws. So he saw a big, burly white man on a rickshaw. And he said something, he felt something in his heart. This is something that he told to Shruti Kirti Prabhu afterwards. But he felt something in his heart. And he ran towards this white man in the rickshaw. Of course, many, many years ago, 30, 40 years ago, a white man in a rickshaw in India was very rare. So he ran towards this man. And he said, "Who are you? Where are you from? Who?" And he was just incoherent. He was thinking, This man, who is he? He was so surprised to see him. And this man said, "I am a disciple of Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakatarya Ashtotra Shata, His Divine Grace, Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada." He's very proud to say this is my spiritual master. This was actually Bhagavad Das, he was a Prabhupada disciple. And Dol Govind Shastriji, he was confused. He said, "Who is this? I don't know who you're talking about." And so Bhagavad Das, he got out a Back to Godhead magazine and he showed him a picture of Prabhupada. And he said, "This is my spiritual master." And then Shastriji said, "This man, Abhay Babu." He was so surprised. And he said, "Yes, I know him. I'm also a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur." And so Bhagavad Prabhu paid obeisances to Dol Govind Shastriji. But he was so surprised to see that Prabhupada had converted the Russians, the French, the Germans, and the world to Krishna consciousness. And so he was so surprised that Prabhupada had jumped on the bandwagon, that Prabhupada had taken the Krishna consciousness movement forward. But this was Prabhupada. Somehow Prabhupada knew that he was going to take things forward. So in the purport, Prabhupada also talks about how ultimately Krishna consciousness is what will quench our thirst. And there's a nice example or story of Akbar Birbal. So, of course, Akbar is a Muslim king and Birbal is a Hindu advisor. And so whenever Akbar has a problem, has an issue, has a philosophical question about life, about the world around us, he turns to his very famous and very wise advisor, Birbal. And so in this situation, Akbar is sitting one day and he's wondering, does God really love us? And there's so many of us, there's only one God. How can he really love all of us? And so, does God really come? Does your Krishna really come to protect us when we're in trouble? So he had this question in his mind, and so he approached Birbal. And he asked him this question. Does God really come to protect us? And so Birbal, often, he wouldn't answer the question philosophically. He said, don't worry, we'll have an answer. I'll show you an answer within the next few days. And so one day they were going to cross a river. Akbar and Birbal would often go traveling together, so they're going to cross a river. And Birbal created an effigy of his son, of Akbar's son. And he put it in the boat. At a certain position, the boat was rather big, so he put it in a position where Akbar couldn't work out that this was actually an effigy rather than his actual son. And so they boarded the boat. And as soon as they got on the boat, they started rowing. They got into the river. And Birbal did something very terrible. He threw Akbar's son into the river. And Akbar was just astounded. And he ran without thinking. He jumped into the river. And he swam to save his son. And he caught the effigy. And he realized that actually this is an effigy. It's not actually his son. So he left the effigy. And eventually got back into the boat, struggled back into the boat. And he was incensed. He said, why did you do that? What was the point? You didn't even stop me. I jumped into the river. I've got all wet. All my kingly clothes are all wet now. And it was just an effigy of my son. And so Birbal explained that actually, this is so that we can understand that for us, each and every one of us are very, very dear to Krishna. Very, very dear to the Lord. And therefore, if any one of us is drowning, if any one of us is having trouble, then of course the Lord will save us, will come to protect us. Just like you didn't even think about twice about jumping into the river to save your son. Similarly, Krishna never thinks twice about saving us because he has a loving relationship with each and every one of us. And so understanding that, we really have to try and take shelter of Krishna. I really have to try and take shelter of Krishna and understand that we all have a very specific, very individual relationship with Krishna. And so we have to be very, very serious in the process of Krishna consciousness. Once Gorakshwar Das Babaji Maharaj, he was chanting. And he was approached by a Grihastha couple. And they were looking to Gorakshwar Das Babaji Maharaj for advice on how to move forward in their Krishna consciousness. And so they came and they approached very humbly and very submissively. They came for instruction. And so Gorakshwar Das Babaji Maharaj gave them two pieces or two instructions. He said, first, you're old now, he said. And therefore you have to keep separate. The Vanaprastha Ashram. And the second was that you have to chant 64 rounds daily. So he gave them these two pieces of advice. So they went away and they tried their best to practice this advice. And so when they returned the next time, Gorakshwar Das Babaji Maharaj asked them, have you been following the instructions? And they said, yes, somewhat. So they said, have you kept separate? And they said, yes. He said, have you been chanting 64 rounds? And the couple replied, yes. And he said, have you been taking prasadam together? Somehow he knew. And they said, no, this is something we haven't managed to do. We always take prasadam together. And so Gokshodas Babaji Maharaj said, that imagine you're a businessman, and in this business you've lost 1 crore rupees. How much is 1 crore rupees? That's 10 million rupees. And of course in that time, 10 million rupees was probably 100 million rupees in today's time. Imagine you're a big businessman, but you've lost a significant sum of money. Imagine you've lost 100 million rupees. How do you feel? You can't take a feast in that situation. You can't even think about enjoying. Your meditation will simply be that you've lost this huge amount of money. Similarly, in this world, you have to imagine and remember that you haven't just lost money, you've lost Krishna Prem. And so don't even think about enjoying in this material world, because you've lost such a valuable gem. You've lost Krishna Prem. And so your meditation should be simply to try and get back this Krishna Prem and nothing else. So I'll leave everyone with that meditation. The meditation of Gokshodas Babaji Maharaj. We have lost Krishna Prem and we have to try and get it back. And Prabhupada has given us every tool we need to try and get that Krishna Prem back. Srila Prabhupada ki. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.